everyone get some food. We might be a little under. Sorry about that. It's hard to gauge how many people will actually come. If anyone wants to give a lightning talk next week, we are doing just lightning talks, and so far I have two. It can be 5 minutes or a little bit more if you want, but I'd love to get like at least five. So if you're thinking about doing something, let me know. You can email me at geekvest@groupon.com, or you can come talk to me about it. But I'd really love to get a few more of those, so please help us out with those, because just two would be kind of short. Cool. If anyone wants to speak other than that at Future Geek Fest, you can also let me know, and we can talk about that. But today we have Marshall. Let's welcome him.
Hey, can everybody hear me okay? Over there? Good? Cool. Yeah, thanks everyone for coming to my talk. My name is Marshall, and I'm a developer at Groupon. So for the past 6 months, I've been working with the Columbia University's research group called X-Ray. So essentially, we are a data privacy research team. We are trying to figure out how can we make, you know, user data being used more consciously and help promote the good use of internet. So, and also that's the link to the research team page. If you guys are interested, you can take a more look at it. There's more details there. So there's a classic story of how Target knows, you know, the family's daughter, like the parent's daughter being pregnant before the parents do. It happens in Minneapolis where a dad essentially received a lot of coupon books about baby products on behalf of his daughter. And he got very furious and asked the customer services, like, why are you sending me my daughter all those baby product coupons? Are you trying to encourage her to get pregnant? Only later he found out that his daughter actually had a pregnancy test, and somehow Target has those results, and then they're trying to target his daughter and sell, like, the baby products to her. So we know we have no privacy. We know that the companies are tracking us. Our data is out there. They are doing something with it. So the question we ask is, okay, what do they do with our data, right? But obviously, that's not a very useful question because, number one, it's way abstract. And number two, it's just given the amount of information we communicate each day, it's billions of gigabytes that it's simply too abstract and then too up there for us to think on that high level. When I say they, I'm talking about obviously the big tech companies we use, the YouTube, the Facebook, Google, all the services that we use on a day-to-day basis that we're constantly interact with, and they consume our data on a daily basis. Again, this knowing those targets is still not enough, right? We still have to narrow down our questions for our research team in order to extract something valuable. So we decided to narrow down even further. We say, hey, can we find if there's anything that Google is doing that we might find interesting, right? We might find interesting to audit, to observe. And then even go to a detail further than that, given this question of how do Google services track our data, our next step is, hey, given this question, what is the type of data that we're trying to identify, right? So we thought about it, and then there are three different types of data we identify. One is behavioral, one is contextual, one is profile. So behavior essentially is, given you're a user, right, you search the webs, you click on certain web pages, and you are sending emails to each other, you are chatting on WhatsApp, on Google Chat, whatever. The contextual, essentially, if you go to a blog site and you see this blog post with certain contents and you have certain ads that pop next to the blog post, right? So in that scenario, the blog post itself is a context to the ad that has been targeted to you. And profile, of course, is your age, your gender, your sexual orientation, basically, for example, your Facebook profile page. So given we identify that, we wanna investigate Google services, and we identify the different types of data we want to observe on, we ask a further question. Essentially, we ask, how did Gmail, a specific Google service, track our email contents? So the email contents that you send to different users back and forth, and then how does that being used to populate ads that are next to it. So for the past about 10 months, we've been aggregating experiment data on this specific question. And recently, Google actually just shut down the Gmail ads banner. So now you only have, there's a promotion tab on the Gmail itself. So we were very lucky that we're one of those last research teams that actually aggregate those data and be able to find any interesting patterns. So given that question, we start to do experiment design. Essentially, on a very high level, what we did is we set up test accounts. Essentially, those are just the mock Gmail accounts that we legally registered with the identical profiles because we want to control the variables. We don't want to have different profiles and then that might affect our research results. And also the test emails. So we carefully kind of write those up based on certain themes. So for example, there are some emails specifically about gun control. There's some emails specifically about religion, God, Mormon, or sexual orientation. Like there's gay and there's pregnancy, marriage. So each email has a very specific theme. And we're using those emails as a setup test emails to run our experiment. And the goal is very simple. How does the ad and the email contents relate to each other? Sort of make this more formal presentation of mathematically. So essentially we have the inputs that is the test accounts we set up beforehand and then the test email we set up beforehand. And the final output that we run through each experiment essentially is a targeting score that relates to each email and each ad. And keep in mind the last notation. Can you guys see that clearly actually? I don't know if I can enlarge the test. Can you guys see that okay or not really? Yeah. But so the targeting score essentially that have a, so essentially is a representation of how we want to correlate data. And those are the numeric values we try to look at in order to find any interesting patterns. So a brief summary about just on a high scale of how many experiments we run. So for the past 10 months, we run about 30 experiments using 30 test accounts. So for each iteration average, so some of the experiment early on is smaller scale versus later on, as we're more and more confident, we have a much larger scale experiment later on. But it averages about 300 emails, snapshots per iteration, a million app snapshots per iteration, and there's only 700 targeting scores, because if you go back to previous slide, we only have like targeting scores if and only if we see the snapshot of email and ads appear together. And on top of that, we do another data processing to filter out the noise. So the targeting score that we actually preserve are the targeting scores that we're confident. Those are rightfully computed, and those are the premise of the experiment setup has been met. So talk a little bit more about targeting scores. So it's actually, so the targeting scores we get out of the experiment is actually composed of multiple scores, and I will explain that later. Essentially, we have multiple algorithms we're trying to run to correlate the emails and ads you see on the Gmail service. And like I said before, there are different types of data, right? If you remember early on, we have profile data type, we have contextual data, and we have behavioral data. So essentially, because the different types of data, we also have different scores and different algorithms that, based on the different scenarios, to keep track of those. And for the purpose of this talk, I'm going to specifically talk about the first two, which is the context score and behavior score. So I think before I jump to the next slide, I want to briefly kind of discuss the context and behavior, just so that we're on the same page. Kind of iterate back, the context is essentially, if you have an email, right, you have an email content that somebody sent to you, or you just see that email, then there's ad populate next to it. That scenario itself is called a context. So that the ad is contextually targeting the email that's being currently displayed right now. Versus behavior, so say I have a friend Tom, right? And I sent Tom an email about, hey, dude, I'm applying for college. I need some money. Yesterday. Say I send that email yesterday, and then tomorrow when I wake up, go to Gmail, then I see an ad about college loans. That scenario is called behavior. Is it because I send an email previous day that triggers this ad to show up in my Gmail service today? Confidence score, I'm not going to go to details about it because it's not the center of the talk, but anyways. So naturally the question, kind of spoiler alert, is that any interesting pattern we found from the targeting scores? The short answer is yes, and it was very shocking, actually, to me. So if you guys are on a browser or whatever, so our stats are open, actually. It's deployed on X-ray search, if you want to search on it. But some of the findings that we found is very shockingly is that if you have contextual related, like say African-Americans, then you have more likely those are specific targeted, right? So a lot of sensitive information has been used, and spoiler alert, your email is being tracked and being utilized to populate those ads. So those are the race and religion that we found, the interesting patterns that we found. You can search that from that web link. So xresearch.com/gmailads. So all the data is available up there. More findings. Essentially, if you have a email that says divorce, you have a lot of more law consulting stuff. If you have email that says gay, the likelihood of having the underwear commercials there is shockingly high. It's shockingly high. And the veterans, there are some college application and college funds, which is trying to help the veterans. And also there's like truck driving certification. I don't know how they target those, but it's very eye-opening and also encouraging results for my research team. Does that make sense, everybody, right now? Or people need some time to search? I will briefly show you what I mean. I'll go to the website. Where is that? So this is the website. So essentially, if I go here, right? So as you can see, those are the variables that we set up for our experiment. So you can play around with it. Active accounts or, you know, active emails. Sure. So what's happening is, let's say I want some religious content. So, because all the emails that we use are very sensitive, have sensitive contents in there. So essentially I say, if I search for church. So as you can see, well, first they will show you your params that you put in, right? And like I said, there's context scores and then there's behavior scores. And the first line is essentially the email subjects that we curated, right? So we manufacture those to specifically reflect the theme. So this is, I found God, right? So those icons are very important. So essentially, if you have a star, that means this ad has the best contact score for this email, that targeting this email. If you have a heart, that means this ad has the best behavior score that targeting this email. So what's very interesting is, of course, is the ad that has both heart and the star. So if you look at this ad, it's actually like a financial Charles Schwab ad link, which I found is pretty baffling. I don't know why they do that. Wait, where is it? Let's see what else. And let me just search another one. Maybe like another sensitive word that's been used. So if you scroll down, again, I'm interested in the ones that have both stars and heart. And you can also see the confidence when computed, what's the context score, what's the behavior score. and how many snapshots we actually took for this email, and when was the time the experiment was run. So this one is the underwear ad I was talking about. So yeah, you can search around marriage, divorce. A lot of results are there, and it's some of them are really interesting. Anyways, back to the talk. So the next thing I want to talk about is how do we make this happen, right? How do we implement the experiment so that we can provide those results and find those interesting patterns? So first of all, I want to introduce the tech stack, the tech choices we made over the for our research team. Most of the stuff is built in Ruby, and the correlation engine that we build is the persistence layer is on MongoDB, and the search data, the X research that I just showed you, is built on Elasticsearch. So there's a ETL synchronous process going on with the MongoDB and Elasticsearch. And every experiment that we run, every iteration we run, essentially follow this this workflow of those three steps, right? The first, we collect data, let it be email, ads, and account. And the second one is we correlate those data. And the third one is we have to find out a way to present those scores. And given a keyword you want to search, find the interesting emails and find all those ads that have high score assigned to this email. So briefly, I want to talk about collect data. Obviously, it's not exciting. So essentially, for the test accounts, each time you just log in the test accounts and you purposely assign the emails that you want to send to each other, then you take a snapshot of what you see using the WebDriver. So in that case, each time you collect data, you will have an email snapshot and an ad snapshot, and also you cluster those to say, okay, this email has those ad snapshot tied to it at this iteration that run at this time. So that's just the collecting process, which is not the exciting part. The most exciting part I want to introduce to you guys is how we correlate those data. So like I mentioned before, those are two different types of the targeting we're interested in. One is contextual targeting, one is the behavioral targeting. And both of those two different algorithms are based on Bayesian models. So for those of you who are not familiar with it, essentially it's a conditional probability that says, hey, given event B happened, what is the likelihood of the event A will happen, right? And then then you can find out the reverse way and say, hey, given A happened, what's the likelihood of B happen? So on a very high level, the A and B parameters we're talking about specifically are the ads and emails, right? Whereas we're trying to say, hey, given this ad showed up, what's the likelihood of this email and vice versa? That is, given this email is presented, what's the likelihood of this ad will show up? So the consistent inputs for both algorithms, you need to have an ad observation that you will get from the collecting step. And you have the set of, so for that ad, you will have a set of active accounts that we assign that always says, hey, these accounts, we've seen these ads populated within those accounts during our collecting process. And we also have our test emails. And another variable of the accounts that says, hey, what are the accounts assigned with certain emails, right? So P in and P out is basically the two tuning parameters we assign for the Bayesian models. So one of the big things about the Bayesian model we applied is we're trying to capture this hidden state, right? So if you think about emails and ads, so essentially they have, you have this observed events on the surface, that is this ad, this email appears and this ad appears together with it. There's also kind of a hidden events happened, if you will, is that what's the, so just like the PI and P out, if an account A includes the email EI, then we say there's a hidden parameters that says, hey, this one is more likely to receive certain ads than other ads, right? For example, if I have a email that says talking about candy, I think it's more likely our initial thought would be it's more likely to receive chocolate ads versus, I don't know, vegetarian ads maybe. I don't know. But essentially, we're making pre-initial assumptions about what's the likelihood of certain accounts with certain emails will receive certain ads. So those P in and P out essentially are those tuning parameters we're keeping track, and we're updating each time when we run the iterations. So the Bayesian model will keep track of what we observed, what we collected, and we adjust those parameters accordingly. So on a high level, the computing process, like I said, we set up the initial parameters P in and P out to be 0.7 and 0.0. Also, another thing I want to point out is those two parameters sort of function as orthogonal in a sense that they don't have to add up to one, right? Because initially we tried that, it doesn't work. And then during the collecting process, we take the snapshots. And for the correlating process, we take the conditional probability. That is, given this ad is showing up, what's the likelihood of this email appears, right? Keep in mind that when we pair up the account and emails, we will assign one email, for example, a gun control email, to multiple accounts, right? So we'll assign that randomly to the test accounts, which all of which have identical profiles, and we have randomized interactions with those test accounts. We will say, okay, this account has email of marriage and gun control sent to another test accounts that might have college applications and religion, right? We randomize those, and with intention, right? We try to make that as random as possible so that we have the accurate conditional probability. And later on, after we run the conditional probability, after we compute the conditional probability, then we try to find the maximum likelihood for given an ad, what's the probability of an email showed up. Then later on, after we collect all of the stats, then we will look at all the distributions and we say, hey, does it make sense to adjust our initial parameters of in and out? Because we assign those hidden hypotheses to all of the email and account pairs later for the later experiment. So kind of want to show you how we did the behavioral targeting. So essentially, ignore the mathematical second line right now. What we're trying to find out, right, is kind of a mathematical presentation of what we're interested in. The question we want to address is, given I send an email EI, does that email EI triggers the ads, right? That's just the answer. That's just the question we want to answer. And how does that transform to a mathematical formula? Essentially, we're saying, okay, given this email was sent, what's the probability that these ads will show up? So if you remember the previous process, we actually computed the reverse way, right? So we computed, given an ad showed up, what's the likelihood of an email? Because that's the way we collect data, and that's how we can, the conditional probability we can compute at the moment. But then using the Bayes rule, we can essentially reverse these, and we can address that question essentially. Hey, does the sent email triggers an ad? So on intuitive level, what it means is an account can be the account can be in two conditions, right? One, the account can be there are two conditions the account can be in. One is the account has the email that we essentially EI was assigned to, but the ad did not see with that email, right? So in that case, we'll say, okay, you have this email and we're expecting you to receive these ads, but based on the snapshot, you didn't see these ads, therefore I'm going to downgrade your probability. So that's how, if you see the first two, if you see this part, that's essentially how we try to adjust to that scenario where if you assign an ad and if you assign an email and we're expecting to see an ad, but you didn't, then that parameter essentially will make your probability less. And similarly, if you were not assigned to an email but you see this ad, we were like, okay, we did not expect to see this happening, but you still got this. So because we have the tuning parameters, the P in and P out, we will still downgrade those probabilities and we say, hey, it's not likely that this email, given this email, you will see this ad because, hey, this account doesn't have that email but still see the ad, right? So we still want to downgrade the probability of that. So another, the next algorithm is the contextual targeting. This one is actually much more straightforward. Also briefly on the behavioral targeting one, that formula, it took us a while to get it to that state because we constantly have to try out different things and then there's a lot of like proof of concept going on initially. And actually when I joined the team, they already figured this formula out. And it took them probably about 1 or 2 months to figure out this is something that is feasible to use in terms of representing the behavioral targeting. Any questions about behavioral targeting? Dead silent. So the next algorithm is essentially about contextual. If you remember contextual, what it means is if you see an email and you have an ad next to it, then that scenario, essentially, the ad is contextually targeting the email content that's been displaced right now. So the question that we ask is very naive, is essentially how many times that this ad is seen next to that email. And we're using the same tune parameters, like P in, P out. And this one is more straightforward and is the same probability is given you have this email and what's the probability that ads will show up. And going to the search data, which is the third step of the workflow of the experiment, essentially this is actually the part that I worked on mostly with the research team, is given they have different tables of how they aggregate emails and aggregate accounts and aggregate the clusters of emails and accounts, and they have a different separate targeting score table. How do you essentially build an ETL tool that essentially mapping all of those and house them into Elasticsearch and being able to identify interesting patterns, right? So there's a lot of back and forth with professors. I remember they were asking interesting questions. They have no idea what they want to search for, and it took us several rounds of fine tuning and we have to figure out exactly what we're trying to index. It was an interesting problem for me because I didn't know Elasticsearch going in, but then I learned a ton. And essentially, it has been proven very useful for them because the X-Research has been used not only for the computer scientists, but also journalists who want to write about the data privacy, like actually going there to see if there's interesting patterns. And right now, we're indexing some results called cross-service, which I will briefly talk later on. The idea is pretty straightforward, but the details were a little bit convoluted. Overall, it's a great experience. So that's the milestone for the first version of X-Ray that we developed. But essentially, we designed this experiment specifically for one Google service and specifically for the for the user data, which is email contents, right? But there were some big challenges there. First of all, that is not the only experiment we run about data privacy. We also ran experiment on mobile, the geolocations, and we also have JavaScript plugins that actually trying to track real-time data instead of setting up test accounts. So each of those experiments is designed a little differently. But we're essentially trying to find the same thing, right? Is that given the essential input, and you have this tech company has a black box that's trying to track you, and you have those output, how does the input correlate to the output, right? So the concept is the same. So, but the experiment was, each of them is running a little bit differently. And also to run the experiment on scale is very hard, has been proven very hard for us. So for each iteration that I showed you early on, each iteration will take about a day initially, and then it close to 2 days to run everything. So I think partially it's because of Ruby, partially it's because how we design things. It's just not very scalable at the time. And the real-time accounts versus test accounts, we don't just want to do this in a very isolated box. We actually, the grand idea is allow users to actually enable this kind of supervising what has been tracked so that they can have a clear sense of, okay, this part of my input has been tracked to produce this kind of output. So we're trying, currently we just don't have this dynamic system set up so that allows user to do that kind of stuff. So that's why we start to experiment on X-Ray 2.0. Essentially, the grand notion is, actually the first clause is, we try to unify the experiment protocol, right? It's very simple. Given the input, and this is the output, and you have a black box in between, how do you correlate the input and output, right? How do you generate hypotheses, first of all? And how do you validate those hypotheses? And third, how do you turn those hypotheses to correlations that you show to the users? So we identify several variables that each experiment will require. Essentially, you need a user information that you can log in to certain services, and you need inputs, which is email contents, search, chat, what have you, and outputs, essentially ads and suggested recommended products. And uncontrolled variables, those are like IPs, for example, where you are, and timestamp, like when you logged in to certain services. But those are not of our interest right now. We're interested in how the user data, purely the user data, has been targeted. Of course, there's going to be geospecific targeting for sure. And to address that, on a high level, given that we have this kind of theoretical, consistent experiment protocol, we thought about how to scale the experiment. So essentially, we identified, so if you remember the three steps that I mentioned, you have to collect data, you have to correlate data, then you have to search for data, right? So essentially what we're trying to, on a grander notion is, those things we can have, for each experiment, we have to have somewhere to collect the data, and we have to have some kind of data analyzers to analyze the observations that we see. And also there are some places we have to generate hypotheses, which can come out of can be in the initial step of the correlation process. So I want to briefly mention those, big architectural overview. We're still in the midst of thinking it through. We're actually doing a new experiment called cross-service. So if you think about, so essentially the question we want to address is, given you have some contents within Google services, like GChat or Facebook chat, whatever have you, right? Say, me and my friend Tom were chatting on Facebook about Book of Mormon, right? And all of a sudden, when I navigate out of Facebook, I go to some other sites, there are some recommendations of theater stuff, right? Clearly, there's something going on is when things, certain services, that data is leaking or being tracked to the external services. So that's the experiment we're trying to conduct, is essentially, hey, given you have your data within the Google services, are those data being used outside, right? Are those data being used when you go to New York Times, when you go to, I don't know, Economist? Are those things are being used to track you? So we're trying to fit that into this new architecture, and we'll see how it goes. But yeah, that's pretty much on the high level the research I've been doing, and I would like to thank my professors. They're awesome. And yeah, check out our research project. See if there's any interesting. Any questions, guys? It's been dead silent. I'm very self-conscious. Yeah.
The account set that you use, were they new accounts, old accounts?
Yeah, so we set up new accounts, and identical age is like, we set up 22, and it's one of the PhD student's name, and geolocation is consistently New York, and we turn on the data access for all of them, so all the accounts are identical. Yeah. Yeah?
Can you say some more about the PN, POUT variable thing?
Yeah. Yeah, so the PN and POUT essentially, So when we started, it's like we signed a PNP out, kind of keep track of the consistent assumption of. So let's say you have an email that is targeting is gun called gun, right? And we're saying okay, and then those are the list of ads you see. There's like marriage, finance, education, and law protection, right? So when we look at those, we will assign initial variable, and we say, hey, there are certain. Before I correlate any of them, we will say this subject of gun control is going to be have a higher probability to see certain subjects, which in this case will be law, right? We assign the initial, well, then we'll say, okay, that is PEN, which is 0.7, or wait, like close to 1. If it's a like education email, then we will say, oh, education email, and then the protection law is not really related. That's our initial guess. So we will say, okay, we'll assign you the P out, which is 0.1, right? So that's the initial likelihood of it coming in. So if you know the Bayesian rules, what it does is we have a prior distribution and prior assumptions. P in and P out is part of our previous initial assumption. Then during the experiment, we collect those data. That's the observation, right? So given the previous observation, previous likelihood, and the observation, we try to form a post distribution. Then that's when we will correlate all the data, and then we will adjust the P in and P out after we finish the correlation, and we say this is the new assumption.
And you run it again?
Yeah. So we have 30 iterations. Each iteration is built on top of the previous iteration too. There's actually, if you go to the website, we have a paper that published, also describe this in details. There's another paper we're working on. But yeah, so that essentially this x-ray.cs includes the description of the team and then the paper we published. Yep. Yeah.
Are the ads for emails pretty much sold the same as the ads for like networks, radio, Google searches?
So our initial assumption. So we looked into AdSense a lot. Mm-hmm. So we tried to see how the policy has been implemented. That we haven't tapped yet. So that's why for every account profile we hold it constant, right? So that we're saying, okay, we try to eliminate other uncontrolled variables as much as possible. We're only going to focus on email contents. As far as AdWords, I think we're just trying to control those variables as much as possible.
If Nestle decides that they want to buy ads for people that are Latino,
yeah.
It was over a 2-week window in October. Is it possible that like maybe in March there might be a different vendor that's most interested in paying the most to get the eyes of the Latino population?
Right, it's possible. Yeah. So one of the challenges of our experiment, of our research, is we're trying to be specific as possible, right? So I think our experiment just doesn't capture that yet, right? So that's why we put the timestamp as the uncontrolled variable for our experiment. Precisely for the things like that, for the seasonal thing, like April Fool's Day, for example, there's going to be different ads pop up, right? We try to eliminate those variables and then only focus on, for example, email contents. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm interested in this type of just analysis. What's a good starting point if I were to want to learn this type of
thing?
Like
statistical side of it. I think, based on your background, I think if you don't have much stats background, Coursera will be a good place to go. They have a lot of valuable classes up there. And there's a lot of open data sets. Like, I know Civic Hacks, right? They have a lot of open data sets about health, about housing. A lot of data I can play with. I'm lucky enough. I actually got to do research with the professors who are super knowledgeable and really challenge me to think statistically. I'm a developer here. That's why I didn't have much chance to exercise my statistical muscle that much. But through this, in a nutshell, you have to find something. It's out there. If you look, it's out there.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. By tracking the result of somebody's behavior online, it seems as though you're somewhat doing the work of the evil marketeers by building a profile of an individual, right? Which is interesting. But what I want to know is whether or not you guys have thought of how ads come up based on interactions between different profiles. Like if I'm looking up Little League jerseys or whatever, and I'm somehow tagged as like a Little League coach, how does that look if I'm communicating with my teacher wife or something like that? What type of ads will come from that?
Right. So to your point, that's actually the concept of behavioral targeting, right? Like kind of echoing that is the ad is triggered because you send somebody an email previously, that previous day. So that captures some of it. It's like the behavioral targeting that we see is not perfect because the setup, we have a test account that we only have like one or two back and forth, right? So so in terms of to capture more of that, I think we have to rethink about how the activities between different accounts how can we manipulate those different accounts more? Because right now the randomization that we do of this test account sent to another test account is only one back and forth. We don't do multiple back and forth, right? Which will be interesting if we see, hey, if this, let's say the emotion between the email thread changes, right? Would that change it? Like, for example, for marriage, if you like start talking about, oh, I had an affair, and then like very like angry emails start to pop up, or then it cooled down for some reason, then what ads will show up later on? That would be interesting, but we haven't looked that up yet. Yeah, sorry.
Could you talk a little bit about how you created the contents for the email?
Yeah, so besides the computer science group, we also have a journalist branch that worked with us. So essentially, we consult with the journalists, essentially that the sensitive topics in their industry, in their field, what they want to see being targeted. So that's the initial resource we went to. And then with that, we kind of manufactured those emails. And actually another imperfect point we have is some of the emails are really just gibberish, right? So for example, I found God is just like, the subject is I found God, and then the contents of email is just God, 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 right? There's no, like, what if the Google services are doing natural language processing, right? That won't make any sense for them to, we're potentially losing targeting information there. So, yeah.
It seems that most of your test accounts are set up as individuals, but a large population of the public that would be reflected are multiple people using a single system because people just don't like to use separate profiles in a family. So you're going to capture different profiles all under one master profile, and then trying to actually aggregate that out to who that community is or who that person is near impossible.
So the question is, what happens if I have one account that are being used by multiple users?
Yes.
We haven't thought of that yet. I think the assumptions we went in was one user, one account. So with that, quite frankly, we were not caring about user. We don't care about accounts that much. If you remember, the specific question we want to address was what ads target what email, right? So we're interested in the targeting relationship between ads and email. We're not looking at the users yet.
But if the email's being, if it's a common, like it's a family level email mm-hmm. account, and there are six family members, each has their own identity and their
right.
own, then there's lots of ad content that's going that may be being missed because the person who steps into that account
right.
next was not the person that was targeted.
Right. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, right? So that's another data privacy question to answer is how does services target a set of accounts or set of profiles within one account based on their activities, right? That's a definitely an interesting question to address. Again, right, if you take a step back, if you think about the initial question is, what do they do with our data? It's just so abstract, right? It's impossible to do any research whatsoever. So that potentially is another experiment we can do. But yeah, I think that's, it's just not the direction we went. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you thought of purchasing advertisements through Google for your study to see if you can connect something abstractly to your own ad?
It's a complicated, it's kind of complicated because we actually got grants from Google. And we're, so under legal issues, where actually in our paper, there's like a notation that says that we click the links is not actually hurt their revenue. We have to prove that we're not hurting their revenue. So it's kind of sensitive to say, hey, we want to use the money you gave me to buy stuff from you. So it just gets a little bit complicated. So that's why we didn't win that direction. Yeah. Yeah.
So of the stuff that that wasn't explained, what couple of variables or single variable do you think would be most useful to add, like click history, geo, you know, if you were going to add the next thing to study?
Right. I mean, for sure, they're using cookies, right, to keep track of your history. We think the profiles also make sense. I did an initial kind of a gut-checking experiment on Google Play. Also, like, the search terms and then how, like, the stuff you watch, for example. If you have a test account just set up, go to Google Play. There's no recommendations. Or there are recommendations, but those are just, like, top popular across everybody, right? But then after you have more contents built up, they are showing you different plays, and also when you watch those plays, it affects what pop up, say, YouTube and Google searches, right? So they can be many things, right? Again, part of the challenge of this research is really ask very, very specific questions, right? Because there are just so many things that, given your having a user's data, they can.
Did you ever try to open the same exact email like 3, 4, 10 times and see how many of the same matches
you have? That we haven't tried, actually. That would be interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, usually the experiment flow is we do initial manual checks on one thread, and if we see signals, then we will run for the last 10 accounts, maybe. And then we'll see if we see any signal whatsoever, and then we will run. If that has been proven, we have some signals, we will run scalable, large-scale experiment. So, yeah. No questions? Well, thanks, everybody.